peek into her eyes.
We're all on the same side, she said.
Sure, he said. Chapter 68 Cindy feathered the mag on her big eyes.
Huh.
What? Luke asked.
I think.
Yep, she was sure of it. The sun wasn't below the horizon yet, and the light was behind her, so she could see pretty well. The image coalesced and resolved.
Remember that pack of Chuckies, the ones who wear those wolf skins? They're back.
Yeah? How can you tell?
Come here.
She waited until he wormed over on his belly and peered through her tripod-mounted binocs.
It's the flutter, you know? The wolf skin is loose, so it catches the wind. Dead giveaway. It's still the same girl, but the guy she's with is new.
Okay, I see it. Whoa, Luke said. What's going on with her face?
Don't know.
Either the girl had the world's worst zit, or she was sprouting another eye on her cheek. And who was this new guy? What had happened to the old one? Dead, maybe. Boy, that would be okay. The more Chuckies that bit the dust, the safer they all were. Besides, those wolf people were a little freaky, kind of Mad Maxy with those wolf skins. There are a bunch of new guys with those wolf people, Luke said. Check out the hardware.
Yeah, I saw them.
Some serious firepower there. A couple Uzis, for sure, or maybe Mac-10s. She wasn't that much into guns. One kid wore this very funky bandolier slotted with what looked like huge bullets. Those brass heads must be the size of her fist.
Scoot over. I want to check on how many normals they got.
I think at least 5, Luke said, making room. The way they kind of walk, you know, all shuffly.
Uh-huh.
She eased her eyepiece into focus, then said,
Oh, boy.
What?
I think there are 2 kids. Like, you know, old enough to be Chuckies.
She could hear Luke's eyes go wide.
Really?
Yeah. Up till now, she'd never seen any normal kids walking into that mine, and now here were 2. They were still too far away for her to make out with much detail, but she thought one was a girl. The other kid wasn't walking right. Hurt? Maybe. What's up? She jumped, then looked over her shoulder at Tom, who was staring down at both of them. God, he was quiet as a cat.
Nothing,
she said, hoping Luke would keep his trap shut. Melly said Tom needed to focus.
Don't make him feel worse about this than he already does.
Telling him about 2 normal kids suddenly being on the Chuckie's dinner menu would not be cool.
I mean, you know.
A frown crept over his face.
You okay, Cindy?
She's okay, Luke said. We were just looking at the wolf people. They're this tribe into wearing wolf skins. We think something happened to the lead guy, that's all. And there are more Chuckies than we thought, she added. Like they hooked up with some friends and all came here together, you know?
Oh. Tom was quiet a second, then said, Luke, we better get going. I want to be in position by the time the moon rises. See you soon, Cindy.
You bet, Tom.
Okay, if she was honest, she knew that the fluttery feeling she got whenever Tom was near was incredibly lame. Like, hello, she was 12. But Tom was so hot, with those dark blue eyes and wavy hair that was this incredible shade of brown with a lot of red, like really expensive cinnamon. And muscles, like real guy muscles. And he was so brave. No way she'd make things worse for him.
Be careful, okay?
She cringed as soon as the words were out of her mouth.
Of all the things I could have said, that's like complete girl.
You too.
Tom's expression remained serious.
Things go bad, you get out of here, okay? Don't let Melly talk you into sticking around.
Nothing's going to go wrong, she said. Good luck.
Something swept through his face, fleet and fast.
Yeah,
he said, but the tight smile looked more like a grimace.
Luck.
Much later, Cindy saw something that changed her mind about those 2 new kids. The one she'd thought was a girl definitely was, and probably a junior or senior. Nice hair, too, long and red.
She'd kill for hair like that. Anyway, the girl, Red, was helping this seriously good-looking blonde guy. But what got Cindy's attention was when Red suddenly pulled up at just about the same moment as the wolf girl, the one with the messed-up face and blonde hair. That was when Cindy knew for sure. Red wasn't a prisoner. She was a Chucky. Well, thank goodness she hadn't said anything to Tom. The knot in Cindy's gut unraveled. If Tom had found out, he might not have gone through with bombing the mine, but there was no doubt in Cindy's mind now. Only Chuckies acted like dogs catching a scent. So Tom and Luke and Weller blowing Red and her friends into eensy-weensy pieces was fine. Oh, Red, Cindy thought and smiled. Sucks to be you. Chapter 69. The mine complex was like a ghost town or something out of a news report on Iraq or Afghanistan, cluttered with decayed and bombed-out-looking buildings that were mostly broken shells of native stone and red brick. In the distance, south and east, the rusting girders of a steel headframe reared. But it was when she caught her first glimpse of the entrance to the mine that Alex was certain. She'd seen this before in those photographs on the display table in that lake house. Why the changed would gather together in the first place was anyone's guess, but if they kept to the familiar, then coming here made sense. This must have been a favorite hangout, not only for the kids from Rule, but for those of surrounding villages and towns. Actually, the scene reminded her, crazily, of a huge high school courtyard mobbed with students just before that final morning bell. End of the road. She trudged along, following the sashaying sway of spider and leopard in their wolf skins. She should have been frightened, but she was too tired. Her shoulders ached from Daniel's weight, and she was drenched in a hard sweat. She'd practically carried him, semi-conscious and feverish, these last 10 miles. He'd only dragged along, his boots scraping over snow like a malfunctioning robot. The closer they got, the more the heavy smog stink of boiled roadkill clogged the air, churning into a general fug. She could feel her throat trying to close against the oily stench. She spat, working to clear her mouth, but the fetor was stubborn and had glued itself to her tongue. Then she caught something new. The contact was very brief, the product of the merest shift in a light breeze. Considering Daniel's sickness, the fume of sewage, and the salt grime of her own skin, it was a wonder she snagged any stray scents at all. But she did, and when she caught it, just that little whiff, she went instantly rigid, Daniel's nearly dead weight around her neck forgotten for the moment. No, it can't be. Alex threw a wild glance to the west. The moon wasn't up yet, but the horizon was a wash of scarlet and neon orange. The day was dying, and the breeze, too, and yet the scent feathered her nose just for an instant, an aroma that was early morning mist spread across the dark shadows of a mirrored lake, and just as evanescent. Chris? The realization coalesced in her throat as a hard lump, an image of the last time she'd seen him, unconscious in a startling splash of blood that stained the snow, floated from memory. Chris was alive, and he was here? No, that couldn't be right. She sucked in another breath, but the breeze must have shifted because that fleeting odor was gone. She worried what was left, letting the smell ball and roll around her mouth. No, it wasn't quite a match, was it? There were elements of Chris there, though. Maybe it was the general fog of the changed, but the smell reminded her of... No! The idea was so stunning she sucked in a sharp gasp. He's dead. It can't be. Spider suddenly stiffened. A moment later, a hot, noxious odor, sharp as a quill, needled Alex's nose. The stink was bitter with fury and frustration and reeked of dread. At his place by Spider's side, Leopard had also gone very still. Their heads were thrown back and their mouths hung open as they drank in that strange scent. Then Spider swiveled, her silver eyes glittery with hate, pinned Alex with a glare.
Alex stumbled back a half step as if struck, and she felt herself drawing in, trying to grow small like a geeky kid anxious to avoid the notice of a class bully. Spider's wound was better, probably because they'd taken their sweet time getting here. Leopard and the gang kept the larders stocked, so Spider had eaten well for over 2 weeks when she wasn't screwing her brains out. Being Daniel's roommate had been a mixed blessing, considering. But the way Leopard's gaze continually scraped over her, Alex was just as happy that Spider kept him busy. God help her if Leopard ever got her alone. But the rip in Spider's cheek would never heal completely. Honestly, Spider looked a little bit like the villain in that Batman movie, the one who'd gotten half his face eaten away so you could see naked teeth and bone and muscle. Two-Face? At that moment, Alex felt Daniel twitch and try pulling out of his slouch. His eyes, sick and bleary, fluttered. His breath was foul from vomit.
What? Daniel?
He hadn't said much all day. She gave him a little shake.
Daniel? It's Alex. Can you...
Oh, Daniel groaned, and then his knees tried to fold.
No, no, she said, bracing him up. Come on, try and walk, Daniel. We're almost there, and soon you can rest.
Ahead, she saw that Spider and Leopard had started on their way again, but they were worried. The smell of it fizzled like soda bubbles popping against her nose. She could see the entrance clearly now, a maw bristling with icicles, ready to eat her alive. Its breath was a stale fog of death and blood, of grimy flesh and sweat from many other prisoners who must be down there, of cold stone, and the changed, of course. She shifted Daniel's weight across her shoulders. Behind, she heard the slow, resigned shuffle of the older prisoners as they came abreast and then broke around her and Daniel. None looked their way. Having spent the last 2 weeks virtually sequestered with Daniel, she hadn't had a chance to get to know them all, and they'd kept their distance, especially now that Daniel was so sick. She wasn't sure she blamed them.
If I go in there, I'm not coming out again.
This, she thought, was her last chance. Run for it or not? She eyed the changed milling around the entrance, an easy 50 right there, and all of them armed, although she was fairly certain they wouldn't shoot her. Spider had other plans. Besides, even if she somehow made it past all these changed, what future would she be running toward? Rule? Chris? No, she'd never make it to either. She knew before she had smelled him, just as Spider and Leopard had on that stray finger of wind. And Alex wasn't entirely sure how she felt about this or what it meant. Because it wasn't Chris out there. It was Wolf.
Chapter 70.
And they always leave a symbol? Nathan's skin was drawn so tight his cheeks were knife blades. Never a name or address?
No, it's always a hex sign, Chris said.
He pressed a finger to his temple, trying to massage away a headache that just wouldn't quit. The red line of his pack's mini-thermometer just kissed freezing, but night was coming on and the temp outside the two-man was dropping fast. Turtling deeper into the sleeping bag, Chris jerked his chin at the drawing of a blue and red pentagram set against a white circle and done in rough strokes of colored pencil.
The colors are important, too, because the first time I went into a barn with the same design but different colors, a blue background and alternating red and white for the star, there was nothing.
He looked up at the sound of a zipper. The tent grayed, and then Lena squirmed through the double flap, dragging a gout of frigid air and just the thinnest hint of sour bile in her wake.
Cold.
Her breath steamed. Quickly zipping the flap shut, she burrowed into the only other sleeping bag.
It feels like it's -100 out there, and it's getting windy, too.
Nathan tugged at his right jowl. Everything come out all right?
Ha ha.
The tip of her nose was windburned, but her face was nearly transparent.
Bet I haven't heard that since second grade.
Nathan spread his hands.
Just trying to lighten the mood.
Chris said nothing. They were all exhausted, but Lena was getting sicker, and her breath was heavy with the stink of vomit. A creep of dread walked his neck. The longer we stay out here, the worse it's going to get. I can't keep putting this off. But he still might be wrong. Nathan was just as experienced, and yet he'd said nothing, not a whisper. When a girl got sick every morning and stayed sick all day, there might be another reason that a man old enough to be her grandfather might be uncomfortable mentioning.
I think there's another storm coming, too.
She drew the bag down tight until only her face showed as a pale oval.
The sky's kind of inky north of us.
Better hope not. Nathan's fingernails rasped over salt and pepper stubble. Bad for us if we get stuck again.
God, it's been weeks. How much further? Lena asked.
Maybe another 2 days if the weather holds and we stop for a whole night. The changed are pretty thick, though, so I think it's best if we keep moving. Rest for shorter periods, stagger our hours, beat Oren that much faster, and then we can find a place to hole up while we figure out where to look. Speaking of which, Nathan proffered the penciled drawing, you know all these hex signs?
Sure, I just don't know which barns have what.
Still swathed in the bag, Lena cocked her head and gnawed at her lower lip. Most of the skin was chewed off. Ugly scabs beetled over her mouth.
But it's like I told Chris. They call that one the Five Wounds. Most barns have a bunch. I don't know what they all mean, but yeah.
Oh, I know this one. Five Wounds of Christ. Pentagram was an early Christian symbol, way before the cross, said Nathan. Is it always the same symbol?
Chris shook his head. It's like I said. When they want me to find them, they leave a drawing in the bookmobile's dictionary. Then it's a matter of going barn to barn until I find the right one. Takes a while.
Well then, I guess the bookmobile's our first stop, unless we get lucky and they got sentries posted.
Nathan eyed him. Anyone ever take a shot? You get the sense of someone keeping watch? He had, but that wasn't new. Ride out of rule often enough where there were raiders or changed or both, and his eyes never stopped pinballing. Sure. On the other hand, I've never come in this way before or brought anyone with me, to the bookmobile anyway. I made Greg and the others just wait outside town. Plus, I'm early. There may be nothing.
God, Lena let out a long sigh. What do we do then?
Panic. He meant it as a joke, but when she didn't smile, Chris put a hand on her shoulder. What he didn't like was that he had to think twice about that.
The big difference this time is you. If they see you, they may realize it's okay to show themselves.
Maybe.
Lena's tone was as dry and lifeless as a shriveled corn husk. But it's not like I was all that popular.
What about this guy, Isaac Hunter? You're absolutely sure you never heard the name.
When she shook her head, Chris looked to Nathan.
You've got to know something.
Yeah, I know. You trust Jess, and if she says he can help, you believe that. But we're not in rule now, and Jess isn't calling the shots. So even if it's only rumors or educated guesses, anything you know or suspect might help.
He watched Nathan think about that. I never knew the name, Nathan said finally. But there was this story floating around from when I was about your age, so 60 years ago?
About Hunter?
No. Nathan ran a hand over his chin. About these wild kids.
No,
he added when he saw Chris's expression. It's not what you think. We're not talking kids going native or something. It's something the Amish kids do, though.
You mean Rumspringa, Lena said.
She propped herself up on an elbow.
I know about that.
Well, I don't, Chris said.
Merton was far enough southeast that anything he knew about the Amish came from movies, which translated to not much.
What is it?
An Amish custom, Nathan said. It means running around. The Amish are different in a lot of ways, and especially when it comes to baptism. Children aren't baptized into the church at birth. It's a lifestyle they have to choose with their eyes open, and the Amish believe that only adults who've experienced the world can do that. So at 16, they let the kids run free to do anything they want. The theory might be sound, but it's a terrible idea.
How come?
Because they don't know anything. None of those kids has the faintest idea of what's beyond their settlements in the English world, and when they get cut loose like that with no one to guide them, they run wild. One corner of Nathan's mouth tugged down in a wry grimace. I met quite a few girls. That was something we boys took advantage of, because no girls we knew would go as far as those Amish girls. All those kids partied hard. Looking back, it's not something I'm real proud of.
Okay, I think I get it.
Chris felt his own skin heat with embarrassment. The last thing he wanted was to hear a guy his grandfather's age reminiscing about all those great hookups from the good old days.
But what's that got to do with this?
Maybe nothing, Nathan said. In the end, most Amish kids run around for a couple years before choosing to follow Amish ways. They get themselves baptized, and that's the end of it. But there are always kids who don't want to come back, or do, and then leave, which takes 1,000 times more guts.
Guts?
Yeah, Lena put in. If they leave after they're baptized, then they're shunned.
Shunned?
A small ding of recognition.
You mean like the ban?
I mean almost exactly that, Nathan said. It's called Maidung, because it's the Amish version of tough love. People will still talk to them, but that's about it. They can't take communion, participate in the community, any of that. The idea is to get them to repent and change their minds. I don't remember how long a person's got before it becomes permanent.
Permanent? As in no going back?
As in excommunication. If that happens, it's like you're a shadow, or dead. Those poor kids got nothing. No education, no family, no resources, nowhere to go.
Nathan paused. But it would be natural for them to stick together and try to help each other.
Like an underground railroad.
The slow dawn of an idea glimmered in his mind. Chris could feel his brain grinding through the implications, making connections.
Is that what I'm looking for?
Well, Nathan paused. Jess thinks you found it. A piece, anyway.
I don't get it, Lena said.
A breakaway community. A settlement of kids made up of those who chose to leave. But they'd need help, maybe even someone who knew what they were going through because he or she had been excommunicated.
Chris's voice trailed away as another idea bubbled from whatever stew his mind had been brewing these last few weeks. He looked back at Nathan.
They'd need help.
You said that, Lena said.
Jess,
Chris said.
What do you mean?
I mean that Jess had to be one of them.
He looked back at Nathan.
That's right, isn't it? She's Amish, or she used to be.
He saw the hesitation cross Nathan's features and added,
Come on. The only way she could know about them in so much detail, enough to give you a name, would be if she'd lived there.
Nathan gave a slow, almost reluctant nod.
That's the theory.
Theory? Lena asked. Why would this even be a secret? So what if she was Amish and then shunned or excommunicated or whatever? Who in Rule would even care?
Well, if their leader's the Reverend's brother, Nathan said, they just might.
Chapter 71
Brother? Chris echoed in surprise. My grandfather's brother? I thought he was dead.
He is, Nathan said.
But you just said,
Wait, I get it. It's not dead, Chris. It's dead as in excommunicated,
Lena put in. She pushed herself all the way to a sit. Her skin was milky white, and the circles around her huge eyes were a dusky purple.
To the Amish, it's the same thing.
But his last name is Hunter, not Jaeger,
Chris protested.
You're a Jaeger, Lena said.
Only half, Chris said. My dad wasn't from Rule at all.
Once you've left the Amish, you've crossed into the English world, Nathan said. Jaeger is German for hunter. Chris let that sink in for a moment. If his grandfather's brother had provided a refuge for shunned or banned Amish kids, then that meant Rule had to be some kind of crazy breakaway community, too. It would explain some of their customs, how cult-like the village was. But which split came first? Rule from Orin, or Hunter's group from Orin, or even Rule?
Do Amish have, like, I don't know, a council? Some group of guys who run things?
All I ever heard of was the bishop, Lena offered, and then she pulled in a gasp.
Wow, wait a minute, that's not right. The way the Amish did it was like this committee.
She held out a thumb.
There was a bishop, she said, and then counted the rest off on her fingers. Also three ministers and a deacon.
Five guys, Chris said, just like Rule.
Not like Rule, Nathan wagged his head. As far as I know, a bishop never makes the laws. Any big issues have to be put to a vote in the community. Rule was never run that way. What they had instead was a sixth chair, which was supposed to represent everybody else. Go take a look at the council chamber sometime. You'll see. It doesn't look balanced.
Now that he thought about it, Chris remembered that way back, Alex had once pointed out the same thing, a sixth chair set by itself behind the others.
Six chairs, but only five men, Chris. It's like there's someone missing.
And the missing man was Rule itself? Something else Alex had mentioned also floated out of memory. His grandfather was very fond of biblical brother stories, Cain and Abel, Jacob and Esau. But his favorite was Isaac and Ishmael, and what had he once said about the world outside Rule?
The followers of Satan have become as beasts. They bear the mark of Cain and the curse of Ishmael.
But if Isaac was his grandfather's brother, then which brother was really the beast?
What's Jess's connection to Hunter? Chris asked. Why does she think he can help us, or even will? It's got to be more than just him giving sanctuary to a bunch of kids.
I honestly don't know, Chris, Nathan said. This is what me and Doc have been able to piece together, and it's still mostly guessing. But you find him, and then I think we got a shot at putting what's gone wrong with Rule to rights.
And if he's dead?
Then I don't know, Nathan said. We just got to hope that he's not.
What do you think?
Chris asked a few moments later. Nathan had ducked out, ostensibly to check the horses, but Chris knew the old man was giving them space to talk things over. Not, Chris thought, that this would change much. He couldn't see any way out of the box but to continue on toward Orin.
I think it's still pretty crazy. Oh, man.
Lena unzipped, then reluctantly peeled back the flap of her sleeping bag with a grimace.
It's so cold my teeth hurt whenever I breathe.
He watched her make her slow, careful way out of the bag.
How are you feeling?
Bad. She paused. I'm sorry I'm slowing you down.
That's okay. Weller was right. We had to put down some serious distance east before hooking back. It would have been the same either way.
Maybe.
She stuffed the bag into its carry sack and cinched down the drawstring without looking up.
Do you ever wonder what's going on in Rule? Like if they've found Peter yet?
I don't think about Rule much at all, not as a place where I belong anymore. I think about what it's doing, what it's done. But Peter? Sure.
Chris snapped his pack shut. The sound was loud in the cold, like the crack of an icicle.
Whether it was his idea to feed the changed or the council's, it doesn't matter. He should have fought it, and he didn't.
So if he is alive...
She fell silent a moment, then continued.
If he's alive, and you do decide to fight Rule, would you fight him?
I guess I'd have to.
Turning aside, he unzipped the tent flap.
I don't know. I just hope I don't. To tell you the truth, Lena, I hope he's already dead. Then it won't have to be a choice.
But what if he isn't?
Then I hope I could talk to him.
What if he won't listen? You know how Peter gets.
Yes, he did.
Cold pillowed against his face. The air was so dry he felt his eyeballs pucker. He could almost make himself believe that he was past rage and sorrow for his friend, even as the pang in his chest gave the lie.
God, why is this up to me? I can't kill Peter. I'd rather blow my own brains out first. I'm not even sure I can fight Rule.
Is there a reason you care?
He didn't look around. Maybe something I should know?
Maybe, yeah.
Her tone was flat and dull.
It only happened twice. Sarah doesn't know, but yeah, I think so.
That has to be it. They're not tracking us because she's changing. The wash of relief left him so weak he clutched the tent flap. He remembered the boy winding that scarf around his neck, the one Chris had planted in the bodies because it was the only explanation that made sense.
They're able to find us because she's pregnant, and Peter's the...
So what are you going to do? Lena pressed. If Peter's alive and he won't listen and you have to fight.
Let's hope it doesn't come to that, Chris said.
Chapter 72.
Oh, shit! Luke retched again, but brought up only watery phlegm. In the glow of that green moon, the boy's face was the color of moldy cheese.
Shit! Keep it down, unless you want every damn Chucky to hear us,
Weller hissed.
He still had both hands clamped around the dead boy's head and a knee planted behind his shoulders. The boy was no older than Luke, and he had made the mistake of wandering away from the pack to enjoy a little snack. They'd heard him slurping and gulping while he was still a good 20 yards away from their hiding place, a snow trench behind thick scrub 40 feet from Shaft 2. The boy was so focused on his treat, a double fistful of brains, that he didn't see Weller until the very last second. The boy had fought and thrashed and nearly bucked the old man, but Weller ground the kid's head into the deep snow until the boy suffocated.
Sorry,
Luke was gasping. He shot another glance at the spongy goo splattered over the snow.
It's just, I never...
Isn't the worst you'll ever see, Weller said, using the back of his hand to smear a wormy snail slick from the underside of his chin.
Lay off. Tom put a hand on the kid's shoulder. We had to do it this way, Luke. Didn't want to get blood on his clothes.
But he was angry. A good headlock and the boy would have been unconscious in 10 seconds. A quick twist of the neck right and then left, and it would have been over. That boy had suffered, also Weller could make a point. Tom had known guys like him in the army, too.
Don't let it get to you.
His heart was pounding too hard. He willed himself to ice, felt the change as the adrenaline tailed off and his pulse slowed.
He's an asshole, but he knows the mine and Rule. You need him just as badly as he needs you.
All right, let's get his shirt off and that jacket, but I'd avoid the pants.
Huffing, Weller levered himself from the snow.
Chucky took himself a little dump.
Weller was enjoying this way too much. I'll do it, Tom said. He rolled the body, then quickly unzipped the boy's jacket and stripped him from the waist up, taking not only the clothes, but the boy's flashlight, knife, rifle, and spare box cartridge full of ammo. He tossed the shirt and parka to Luke.
He's about your size.
Oh, yay.
Luke handled the clothes as if they were rattlesnakes.
We sure I got to do this?
Nope, but it can't hurt.
Weller kicked snow over the ruin of gluey brains.
If you two smell like Chucky's, it's all to the better. Remember, once we get inside, I'm baloney.
You can do this, Luke. Leave the thermal top for me. Now be quick.
Hooking his hands around the dead boy's ankles, Tom dragged the body into the trench, then scuffed snow until the boy was invisible. The rifle, a scoped Browning BLR-81, was a good weapon, but useless for their purposes. Their Uzis were silenced. After thumbing out the bullets, he broke the weapon down and threw all the hardware in different directions. By the time he returned, Luke was just zipping up the dead boy's jacket.
This feels kind of creepy. Luke gave the cuffs a tug. Like, you know, I'm wearing him.
That's the idea, Weller grated.
You can burn it after, Luke, Tom murmured.
His eyes were focused on the rolling, bushy terrain between their hiding place on this rise and the shaft. In the moonlight, the snow glowed with the soft phosphorescence of a firefly and reminded him of the view from night vision goggles. Ahead, the swell of a snow-covered mound bulged.
You sure that's the shaft?
Yep, Weller said. Stick close. Last thing we need is to take a tumble.
They shambled over the snow, awkward because of the packs and ropes and oozies, and Tom felt the terrain change under his boots. The mound wasn't solid, but ice-encrusted rubble. They crabbed over the snow, and then Weller reached for a small jury-rigged headlamp, a tiny snick. In the sudden spear of light, the shaft yawned in a black circular sore, a wide tube of concrete about 20 feet across. The head frame and hoist were gone. Only an iron ladder bolted to the concrete remained. Weller scratched through snow for a rock, then opened his hand over the shaft. Tom counted silently. 5 seconds. 15. At 30, he said, I didn't hear anything. You? Weller shook his head, then swarmed to the ladder. Everything looked solid, but up close, Tom could smell rust and see where the rungs had oxidized and crumbled. Thin fractures spidered around some of the bolts where water had seeped, then frozen, breaking open the concrete.
Only one way to test it, Weller said.
He threw a quick clove hitch onto a carabiner, then clipped in. Luke grabbed Tom's waist, and Tom braced himself, the rope looped across his back and firmly gripped in both hands, as the old man carefully lowered himself onto the first rung, shifted his weight, took the second rung, the third.
Think we're good to go.
Luke ran a hand over the iron. Feels pretty rotten to me.
Boy, I was dropping down cliffs in Quang Nai while Charlie rained fire, Weller said. This is nothing.
Yeah, and you picked your teeth with a bayonet. We don't have much choice, Luke, Tom said.
But there's nothing to tie the rope to, Luke said. If the ladder goes...
It's a long way down, Weller said. You backing out?
Just do what I do, Tom cut in. He'd be damned if he'd let Weller embarrass the kid. Except if I slip. Don't do that.
Luke exhaled a shaky laugh.
I'm good. How far are we going again?
The kid's voice broke on the very last word.
Far enough to knock the legs out from under those little shits, Weller said.
What if we can't? Luke asked. Then it's going to get pretty exciting, Tom said.
Chapter 73. Way back, her parents took her to the Iron Mountain mine outside Vulcan. After donning red hard hats and yellow slickers, they'd ridden a small tram into the mine through a rock straw so narrow she could put out either hand and touch stone. Caged bulbs hung from a low-slung ceiling, but pockets of thick shadow and inky tunnels pushed in. She hadn't thought she was claustrophobic, but then in the main stope, the tour guide turned out the lights just for show. The darkness closed down like a fist and was so absolute it was all Alex could do to keep from screaming. Her eyes opened wider and wider and wider. If this had been a Roadrunner cartoon, they'd have popped right out of the sockets on little springs. Ka-boing, ka-boing. But there was nothing to see because there was no light. At all. She wasn't a wuss, but that had been bad. This was way, way worse. They'd split her and Daniel off from the others, driving them further and further into the mine, down through endless turns, through a warren of drifts and tunnels festooned with spray-painted numbers and letters, and then down gated stairs. She lost track of the turns, and the greater reek of the changed faded away. Now, though, she was in complete and utter darkness. Well, except for Mickey, who said she'd been crouching on a nubbin of rock in this isolated side chamber for over 7 hours.
No sound, either, except the splash of water over rock, Daniel's rapid breaths, and the thrum of her heart. Oh, and the bats. Even if she hadn't caught their scent, dry and dusty and a little sour, she would have heard their papery rustle. Sometimes they squeaked. No problem. Just, she really didn't need to run into them. With my luck, I'll get rabies. She wondered if rabies was passed on in meat and then decided she was being morbid. Job one was to get out. But how? The changed obviously knew their way around, so it occurred to her did the bats. Both must only go as deep as the air was good, except this air wasn't so great. Not bad, but every so often she caught a whiff that reminded her of sulfur from a matchhead, but she hadn't keeled over, and the bats were here, so the air must be okay. She rifled a glance behind. Nothing to see, of course, but I wonder if... She licked her finger and then held it up. Maybe just a hint of air from back where the bats hung out. Could be them flapping their wings, or just breathing. Good job, Alex, she said. Creep yourself out, why don't you? The bats rustled at the sound of her voice, and then Daniel groaned, a long, low sound. Daniel? She leaned to her right, her fingers feathering the dark. Her hand traced a cheek. His skin was too hot and damp with sweat. Daniel? No reply, not even a groan. She waited a few more seconds, then took her hand back. His scent clung to her fingers, and her stomach did a little flip. She still had another option. Reaching into her jacket, she found the lump she'd zipped between lining and shell. 20 Percocet, 9 Percodan, and 1 Valium wrapped in gauze. Those were all the pills she'd managed to gather from the guest house floor in the short span that she'd been left alone while Leopard's crew dragged out Sharon's and Ruby's corpses. The pills were insurance. A way out that could be at a time of her choosing. Of course, waking up as a gork in a pool of vomit would be so her luck. But could she do it? Kill herself if there was no other way? Maybe. Pills were lame, and guns more her speed, but if she had no other choice... But what about Daniel? No matter how much she turned it over in her head, she just couldn't decide. It was one thing to promise Tom. Daniel was a whole other story. She didn't know him well enough, and he was his own person. She also might be wrong. They had been virtually inseparable for 2 weeks, and Daniel was sick, yes, but he was still Daniel. So what if... Stop, she murmured. You want to think about something? Think about finding a weapon. Okay, there were rocks, but what else? This little side tunnel had timber supports. There must be nails she could pry free. How to dig them out was a problem. She thought about that. Her fingers played over Ellie's Mickey Mouse watch, and then the buckle. There was that little prongy thingamajig. Not very long, but it might work. What she really needed was something strong, made of metal. Wait! Her hand went to her neck, and then she reeled out her silver whistle on its chain. She fingered the mouthpiece. It wasn't exactly sharp, but the slight curve would help, and the whistle was strong enough to... Her thoughts choked off at the crunch of boots. The darkness in the main tunnel dead ahead grayed, and then grew brighter. She pulled bolt upright, eyes wide, her body quivering like a cornered bunny's. Oh, God, this was trouble. Her heart catapulted into her throat. She knew because she recognized his smell. He was alone, too. No Slash, no Spider. None of his usual crew along at all, because he wouldn't want to share. If she'd had any lingering doubts about just what he had in mind, her vision chose that moment to go a little muzzy, like a movie doing one of those queer little dissolves between one scene and the next, as the monster in her head came alive and flexed and shifted. Because like recognizes like. Leopard. Chapter 74.
Hold up, Weller hissed.
Hooking an arm through the ladder, he dug out another rock and let it fall into the yawning darkness below. Tom counted off the seconds. This time, the splash came when he got to 6.
About 200 feet.
Yep.
Weller's beam cut across the concrete below. 20 feet down, a grated metal platform and set of stairs leapt into view. The platform fed into a wide bore, and Tom saw a glint of metal track at the lip. In case there was any doubt, HL and 540 were stenciled above the bore in dull yellow spray paint, indicating that the hall level was 540 feet from the surface.
This is where we get off.
I thought you said it didn't access the mine until further down.
Guess I was mistaken. Been a while, and the map's rough.
Terrific. Weller, we have to make it almost 200 feet deeper, then work our way west to get under that big rock room. Can we do that from here?
Think so. Only we got another problem.
Tom didn't like the sound of that, either. As they'd gotten deeper, the shaft's condition had worsened, with concrete chunked off and bolts so loose they rattled. The shaft wasn't uniformly smooth. Lengths of corroding iron, thick insulated wires, and pipes ran along the sides. The rotting hulk of the original hoist's support structure jutted here and there in broken metal fangs, dark heaps of what looked like rat droppings, but which Weller said was bat guano, pilled from the struts and around the metal collars that supported the pipes at regular intervals. The air had changed, too, growing a little warmer and so moist Tom felt its fingers drag over his face. The air also smelled, and not just of stagnant water. The stink was more like a rank, intermittent, fairly faint exhalation, as if the mine had a terminal case of morning breath. Luke's light speared down from 3 rungs above Tom's head.
What is that? It's like rotten eggs.
Hydrogen sulfide. Swamp gas.
Weller paused, and when he spoke again, Tom heard the first hint of worry.
I should have thought of this. All this bat shit, it's the perfect food. We're only getting a little whiff now and then, but the gas is heavier than air. The further down we go, the more concentrated it'll get. Then again, maybe not. Might be just isolated pockets here and there.
Will it hurt us? Tom asked.
Gets too thick. Oh, yeah. Kill you like cyanide.
Great. What else?
It explodes. Like soda under pressure. Only it also catches fire real easy. If a chamber breaks open when those charges go...
We'll be flash-fried.
Fireballs traveled fast, eating oxygen and crisping everything in their path. If they had to shoot, the muzzle flash might spark an explosion, too. Tom chewed at his lower lip.
Will we know it if we get into trouble with the gas?
He could hear Weller thinking about it.
Eyes and nose should burn, and the smell will get worse, and then it'll change, get almost sweet. Other than that, I don't know.
Do we go back? Luke said.
Another long pause.
Look, I can't guarantee, but Luke, you want out. There's no shame in that.
No, Luke said, a little unsteadily and too quickly. I'll be okay. Besides, if there are 3 of us, it'll go faster.
Well, remember I said we have another problem? I wasn't talking about the gas. Look down at the ladder.
They all did, and in the bright ball of their combined light, Tom saw what Weller meant. Decades of corrosion had done their damage. The ladder simply ended, broken off like the peg of a rotten tooth. Between the break and the platform, there was a gap easily 20 feet wide, and it wasn't a straight drop, either. The platform was secured in a bolted bracket to the concrete and stuck out like a tongue, ending 10 feet to the left of the break.
Oh, boy, Luke breathed.
Way I see it, Weller said, pulling off his coil of 2-inch rope. One of us shimmies down, then swings over and ties off the other two.
Tom glanced up at Luke. When was the last time you hung around a jungle gym?
How does so long ago I don't remember sound? Luke said. I just hope I don't piss myself.
Remind me to tell you about swinging across a gap of 50 feet, 30 feet off the ground.
They make you do that in the army?
Oh, yeah. Then the smart guys figured out how to make a rope bridge. He looked down to see Weller already tying off rope to several rungs above his head. I can go first.
Better let me.
Weller gave the rope a final tug, then furled the coil to which he tied off another thinner rope.
One less old fart to worry about if I don't make it.
What's the other rope for? Luke asked.
Watch and learn, boy.
Wrapping his hands around the rope, Weller got a good footlock, trapping the rope under his right boot and looping it over his left before easing off the ladder. The rope let out a squeal as the knot tightened with the added weight and the iron squalled. There was the bounce and ping of rock against rock, and then a distant splash as the dislodged concrete found the water.
Don't come down until I'm across.
Don't worry about that. Tom's breath hung in his chest as Weller inched down, but the old man clearly knew what he was doing. Getting up or down a rope wasn't about arm strength. The legs did most of the work. 5 feet before his rope played out, Weller tucked so his feet were nearly at the level of his chest.
What's he doing? Luke asked.
Grabbing the other rope. Tom watched as Weller made a one-handed snatch. Then, still hanging by his free hand, Weller used his weight as a pendulum, folding at the hips and bucking. The rope complained.
Creak. Creak, creak, creak.
The rope's swing widened, and then Weller was sweeping over the platform once, twice. On the third swing, he let go. His arc was perfect. The second rope unspooled behind, and he landed on bent knees with a dull boing, fell to his knees, then staggered to his feet.
No sweat, he said, but he sounded winded. Hang on.
Weller unreeled the second rope, walked backward, then tied off the end to a platform support.
Wow! Luke made an impressed sound. He made a bridge.
Use your hands and feet, Weller said. His voice echoed in the shaft. It's got enough give for a good lock. Just don't look down.
Easier said than done. Tom was sweating by the time he was midway, hugging the rope to his chest, nearly bent at the waist, feet firmly locked around the rope. He did exactly the wrong thing then, thinking about the water below and the drop, and felt cold sweat lather his face. His arms trembled and he thought, I'm going to slip, and then I'll fall.
Tom, Weller said sharply, keep moving, come on.
That snapped him back. Right. He breathed, swallowing back a ball of fear. He kept his eyes focused on the rope, tried not to think how much further he had to go. He heard Weller scuffling over metal, and then the old man was moving alongside, bracing him up as Tom dropped onto the platform.
Thanks, he said, gulping back air that tasted very faintly of scrambled eggs. I froze.
Weller clapped a hand to Tom's shoulder.
Everyone freezes once in a while.
Why are we going uphill?
Luke whispered as they moved in a single file through the tunnel.
Don't we need to go down?
Opening's actually a little lower than the level you'll be working, Weller muttered. It's easier to move skips, these big metal buckets, down instead of up.
But we'll still end up below the Chuckies, right? Tom asked. The tunnel was much smaller and tighter than he'd imagined. He'd had visions of expansive, soaring ceilings. Instead, a network of wires and hoses ran only 3 feet overhead. He felt the weight of all that rock and earth pressing down. He noticed something else. They weren't walking on dry earth, but splashing through puddles on the tracked floor. The air was very moist, almost humid, and he could feel and hear the dull patter of water as the ceiling wept onto their heads and shoulders.
We're below the water table, but there must be enough air pressure to keep the water from rising any further.
Or this might only be an isolated pocket, and there was water all around them. Not a comforting thought. Break through the wrong wall, and they'd be caught in a flash flood. Moving out of the tunnel, they hooked right. Tom immediately felt the change, how the tunnel was higher and wider. Bits and pieces of machinery were scattered here and there. A square metal bin, lengths of metal protruding from rock, frayed nets strung along the stone. His light caught a flash and sparkle, and he heard Luke,
"Whoa, is that gold?"
"Nope, that's fool's gold, pyrite. Real gold's a bit dull, and you find it with a lot of quartz."
Weller trailed his light over the rock and then pointed to a thick, milky white buckle.
"Right there's a bit. That kind of dirty orange stuff."
"That's it?" Luke sounded disappointed.
"People have died for less," Weller said.
Tom opened his mouth to say something, but then he heard a scratchy buzz. Not footsteps. This was like a hive of bees. Then from somewhere very far away came an airy scream. Luke gasped.
"What is that?"
"Voices," Tom murmured. He felt the hairs rise on his neck.
"Chuckies don't talk."
"I don't think they're Chuckies." Tom turned, straining to hear above the thump of his heart and the crack and pop of damp rock under his boots.
"You mean normal people?"
"Yeah." Protruding from the rock was the mouth of a yellow metal duct. It reminded Tom of a ventilation system, but this opening was very wide. Through it came a fitful, intermittent buzz, a distant ebb and flow like the susurrant whisper of the sea stirring stone.
"People talking.
What is this?"
"Ore chute, coming from pretty far above us."
Weller paused, then said grimly,
"Sounds like those little bastards got a fair number of prisoners."
"We need to do something." Luke's eyes were liquid. "Can't we help them?"
"We're going to." Weller jerked his head. "Come on."
They found what they were looking for 12 minutes later, which Tom thought was cutting it pretty close. Any further, and they could kiss any chance of getting out in time goodbye. Weller had led them down a flight of gated stairs, first one level and then another, and then they'd moved fast, ducking through corridors, Luke stopping to chalk X's to mark the turns. The first room was smaller than he thought it would be, and the pillars weren't exactly uniform either, but mushroom-shaped, drooping from the ceiling in a taper before spreading out in a wide, rocky footprint. The layout reminded Tom a little of a very large, very low-ceilinged basement held up with 2x4s and jackstraws.
"This is it?"
"Nope. Worst stope's further west, and not exactly on the same level. We just got to find it," Weller said.
"I thought you knew where it was," Tom said.
"It's been a while. You keep saying that. We'll find it."
"Well, let's do something." Luke was unhooking his pack. "Where do we start?" Tom pointed. 2 charges right there next to that big pillar just off center. Put 'em behind the main entrance here, out of sight. That way, if anyone does smell something or come by, they won't see it." Luke nodded and moved off. "I'm on it."
"I'm going to scout ahead," Weller said.
"You should wait." Tom had dropped to a knee and opened his bag, but now he stopped and looked up.
"One of us should be with you."
Weller shook his head, then glanced over his shoulder and lowered his voice.
"This is taking too long. You see that kid's eyes, how they're getting a little red? I think that's the gas. You're starting to look like you need to sleep off a bender."
"What?"
Only when Weller mentioned it did Tom feel the slight burn and tingle.
"The smell isn't worse."
"It may not have to be, or maybe it kills your sense of smell after a while," Weller muttered. "How's your breathing?"
"Fine, until you mentioned it."
"Yeah, I'm getting tight, too." Weller flicked a look at his watch. "How much time you need?"
"No more than 5 minutes."
"See you soon," Weller said.
He'd already prepared the blasting caps, carefully crimping each shell onto time fuses with sogged needle-nose pliers, and then using the C4 punch to core a hole for the detonators. He timed the burn rate, 45 seconds a foot, and under more normal circumstances, this wasn't necessarily a problem. Just pull the igniter and run like hell, but they didn't exactly have a lot of open space in a mine. For more elaborate preps, there was remote detonation, but Tom's only option had been to rig a time device.
"Done," Luke dropped beside him.
Okay, give me another couple seconds here.
He glanced at his watch, almost 5 minutes gone.
Here, hold this one straight out. The rock's pretty uneven.
He waited until Luke got his hand around the charge, then unspooled a few lengths of duct tape around the legs, securing them to the stone. Uncoiling the time fuse, he used tiny strips of duct tape to keep the waterproof cord from curling on itself.
Let's go.
Where's Weller? Luke asked at the entrance. He squatted and scratched two large X's in white chalk.
Scouting ahead for that room he's hot to blow.
Tom glanced at his watch again. 7 minutes gone.
How many charges you got left?
8. He had 11, plus 2 blocks of C4 and time fuses, because you just never knew.
Come on. If he's marking the way, we can catch up. Better than just waiting here.
Okay,
Luke said, then coughed. His nose was red as Rudolph's, and he looked as if he'd just staggered back from a serious bar crawl.
Chest feels funny.
You're doing great. We'll be done soon.
Tom trotted down the tunnel with Luke on his heels. His lungs burned with the effort, and he coughed and thought,
maybe 10, 15 more minutes, then we got to get out no matter what.
To his right, he spotted stairs, an X chalked low on the wall and a down arrow. The stairs sounded too loud, their footfalls ringing and echoing against the rock. At the bottom, Weller had chalked a small, left-facing arrow.
We're moving either west or south.
Tom pictured the terrain overhead. This would put them closer to the decline ramp and then further from the first set of charges. They would have 10 minutes max before the first charges went off. By then, they had to be well on their way toward the shaft.
Just hope we have time.
Whoa, whoa!
Luke hissed, and then slowed down.
You hear that?
Tom had been so focused he hadn't noticed, but now he did hear. A grunt, and then a harsh gasp, the scrabble of feet over rock.
Weller.
He darted down the hall, running on the balls of his feet, then grabbed Luke before the boy could spurt ahead. Together, they flattened against a rock wall just left of another X, in time to hear Weller groan. Chapter 75. Flicking the Uzi's selector, Tom pivoted, weapon at waist level, each hand on a grip. He felt Luke move to flank him. There were 4, a boy at each arm and another draped over Weller's waist. The girl had straddled Weller's chest, and Tom and Luke had arrived in time to see her rip a chunk of Weller's shoulder with her teeth. There was a harsh tearing sound, and the old man bucked, trapping an abortive scream behind his teeth. In the bad light, Weller's blood was oil, and his skin would have looked at home on a shark. The girl heard them, the scuff of boots against rock, and she twisted, a stupefied expression spreading over her face. A ragged flap of Weller's skin hung from her mouth, and she was still chewing it back like a kid with a too large bite of spaghetti. Gore painted the girl's mouth and face in a clown's scream. Her eyes widened, and then her snack fell with a moist plop to the rock as her jaw went slack.
Oh, fuck!
Luke said, and then he and Tom were squeezing off quick, silenced shots. Tom heard the tick-tick-tick of brass against rock, saw the sudden blooms on the girl's chest. She fell back without a sound. The boys were halfway up when Luke and Tom fired again. The boys jerked, then drooped in limp tangles.
Weller,
Tom knelt by the old man. The girl had gnawed off enough meat to reveal the dull glimmer of bone.
Found it.
Weller was shaking. His face gleamed with sweat and blood. He had a hand clamped to his shoulder, but Tom heard the drip, drip, drip.
Down the tunnel. I was coming back when those little fucks jumped me. Never saw them.
Why didn't you call for help?
Luke asked. Tom knew why, read it in the tears streaking the old man's face. Weller hadn't wanted to give them away.
Not just an old hard-ass. The guy's willing to go down to make sure we do this.
Dragging out the thermal top he'd taken from the dead boy, he used his knife and ripped it into strips.
This is going to hurt, he said.
Just do it, Weller said.
He let out a gargling, barely audible scream as Tom crammed silk into his wound. Weller panted as Tom knotted more strips of silk into a crude bandage.
Lucky if I don't get rabies.
What do we do? Luke said.
You finish.
Weller's skin was ash and his swollen eyes were pink, but his voice was a knife.
I marked the rooms. The good one's a little further on and down one more flight of stairs, but you've got to hurry.
Tom knew he was right. There were more kids where these had come from. After he and Luke dragged the bodies to a corner, he helped Weller to a spot along the far wall, then laid an Uzi across the old man's lap.
Don't use your light. You hear something and we don't say your name, you stay quiet.
Don't worry about me, Weller said.
10 minutes, Tom said, and then he and Luke hustled. The first stope was even better than the one they'd already rigged. The cored rock room was larger, the pillars supported.